This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Get your inside pass to everything Saints football.
Jimmy Graham brings it down, and that is a touchdown, New Orleans!
We'll take you to places most fans never go. To practice, to the sideline, to the locker room. Following every twist, turn, and touchdown of the Saints season.
That is going to be a touchdown! Taysom Hill! Taysom TD!
Welcome to Inside Black and Gold.
And that is going to be a touchdown again. And guess who? Mike Thomas.
Now, here are your hosts, Steve Geller and Jeff Nowak.
Oh, baby!
Welcome Inside Black and Gold. Steve Geller along with Jeff Nowak. Sorry, a little miscue for me. Took a time off the last episode. Jeff was running solo, but I'm back in the mix. Free agent frenzy hitting the black and gold. Made a few additions, and we're going to finally get into our second round of mock drafts as we get ready for the big day approaching. Jeff, the Saints making some moves in free agency. Nothing too sexy, but definitely one big name so far.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've been teasing this 2.0 mock draft for like 3 weeks now. So people are going to be like, oh my God, we're finally going to find out about these incorrect picks you guys are making, yeah. Right? What's going to be funny is when I don't change my picks, it's the same thing. But yeah, we'll talk about that. Second segment, we're going to get into Steve's mock draft. Third segment, we're going to do my mock draft. But this first segment, we're going to catch up on free agency stuff. On a personal note, anyone watching this video can tell I am back. this weird wall behind me. I'm back in my parents' kitchen, you know, so it's been another whirlwind trip to Connecticut. Long story, but we don't need to get into that. But I did go to the Big East championship last Friday, Saturday, whatever day that was. And that was fun. Except what I figured out is you can sit far enough away at Madison Square Garden that it feels like you're watching from outside.
Wow.
Because it's a really weird arena. I don't know if anyone's ever been there. They can relate to this. There's this like weird catwalk that comes across and has seating on it. So if you're behind that, it kind of feels like you're sitting on a hill outside the building and just watching. Like if you've ever seen like Yankee Stadium, for example, like if you're in a high rise across the street, you can actually see the field because it's right in the middle of the city. It's kind of what it felt like because we were the very back row. And these were not cheap seats anyway, but I did get to see UConn win and the future two-time back-to-back national champions, first time since Florida. It's going to happen, even though they got kind of effed over in their bracket. So just figured I'd let everyone know.
You can talk to Kim Mulkey, too. The Lady Tigers don't have a favorable regional either.
They got hosed. Yeah. Well, like, anyway. But they do get to play in Brooklyn, which that's the funny thing. Like, you talk about Madison Square Garden. I don't know if anyone ever actually watched this game. There was no point because they were gonna win either way. But if you go to Madison Square Garden for a UConn game, it's like 90%. It's like you go to a Pelicans game and the percentage of fans is like, you know, 70-30, right? There was a Warriors game I went to, it was Pelicans Warriors game, where there were louder cheers for a Kevin Durant dunk than anything the Pelicans did the entire game. Whereas, like, this is like Madison Square Garden for a Big East championship game. It's like 90% UConn. It was actually kind of hilarious watching the Marquette fans trying to start cheers, because it would be like, "We are Marquette," but it was like two people.
Right, and the Huskies just drown them out, I'm sure.
It was a good time. But anyway, back to Saints free agency. Yeah, so we talked about this. The last time we talked was like Thursday, I think. You know, that was me. So we went through some of the early signings, the Nathan Peterman, the fullbacks, right? Willie Gay, we heard a lot from Willie Gay. Since then, there have been three more signings and one reported to come signing. That one is, I forgot his name already. Offensive lineman, Oli Udo. It's not official yet, so I don't want to get too much into it just in case it falls through. I don't want to waste anybody's time. But, you know, that's just a good depth signing. Offensive line, you're going to see a good bit of that going forward. The two wide receivers, Stanley Morgan, who's a special teams ace. He's a New Orleans guy. He's got like five catches his entire career. He is specifically a special teams guy. And it's not a fun pick. It's not an exciting pick. It's not a, you know, you're swimming in the shallow end of the pool here. Very much so. Like, you're in like 3 foot deep water for that signing. But you need that guy, right? Because you look at the guys who have left, right? Ike Yiadom to the 49ers, Zach Bond of the Eagles. That, you know, they were important pieces on the defense, but they were even more important pieces on special teams. So you got to fill those. You know, if you find a special team you like, you go get them. That's what that is with Stanley Morgan. Cedric Wilson, we're going to talk a little bit more about. More of an upside wide receiver. Guy knows the offense that Clint Kubiak's going to be bringing in. So we'll talk about that. But the big signing, defensive end, Chase Young. You know, we talked on Sports Talk on Friday, like, oh no, you rescheduled the visit. What's going on? Like, I don't know. Maybe his flight fell through. Maybe he had something he had to deal with. Not a big deal. He came in on Monday. You know, they had a big recruiting pitch, nice dinner. And they signed Chase Young 1 year, $13 million. That's a significant amount. But I do think it's the right move, is the 1 year deal. Can pay whatever you want because it's not going to hurt you beyond this year, right?
Well, that's why when you said the significant amount, I laugh when people are calling it a prove it deal. I'm like, that's a pretty nice prove it deal.
Well, it's a prove it deal in the sense that it's not a multi-year deal.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
But it's a significant amount, like, and it's all guaranteed. So, exactly. You know, they, you know, I think, and I think that's how kind of how it works, right? Like, if you're going to give someone a 2 year, 3 year deal, you might be able to get away with a lower average value. But if you're invested in saying, hey, we want this to be a 1 year deal, and then you'll pay a little more on the front end to make that work. Now, the Saints are going to have to figure out the dollars. They had the money to clear that. They had about $18 million in cap space cleared. I'm a little confused at how the Willie Gay signing factors in, because you're at a top 51 apron right now. So anything that ranks below the top 51 contracts technically is a wash. So you're not just like, whatever you pay Nathan Peterman, you're taking out of that $18 million, right? If he's on a minimum deal, then that really doesn't even eat into that $18 million as long as he's below the top 51. So like a contract like Chase Young's, yeah, that's going to bump someone down to the number 52, right? Whoever was at 51 is at 52. So that's going to take a little bit off that money. And then, so you're going to offset that with a $13 million, assuming they didn't set it up with any void years or anything, which I don't know why you would. If you wanted to set up a multi-year deal to save money on the front end, you would have had it be a 2 year deal with the second year not guaranteed.
Agreed.
So, right. That's a smart move for the Saints. It's a win. It's a move that helps them win now without hamstringing them next year and beyond if it doesn't work out. And it's also a guy who has a lot of incentive to show up and show out and earn himself a much bigger deal in 2025 free agency. It's a position of need. It's one of the bigger free agent signings they have made in several years in terms of like
name
recognition, top end ability. You know, I think
it's wild to think this dude was the second overall pick in the 2020 draft, man. That's not far off.
He was a defensive rookie of the year that season. 7.5 sacks. He led all rookies in sacks. His second year, he had the ACL tear. And I don't think, you know, we talked to him a good bit, and not a guy who's going to have a ton to say. We established this. We're going to hear a good chunk of that interview here in a second. But I think if he was being honest, he would tell you that the ACL tear was difficult to come back from. Obviously, you missed basically an entire season. And then, you know, that's one of those injuries that's like, yeah, you come back, but you're not, you know, like you're healthy enough to play, but are you healthy enough to play at the top level of your own ability? And I don't know if he ever got there with the Commanders. They obviously traded him to the 49ers. He made some nice plays during that playoff run. He had 2.5 sacks with San Francisco. I don't think he lived up to what they were hoping he would, because otherwise he would probably still be there. Because, like, you're talking about a one-year deal. You're not talking about a 3-4-year deal that's a massive commitment. The 49ers probably could have swung a deal for this guy. They chose not to. So, I mean, you're kind of looking at it. This guy's in his fifth NFL season. You know, obviously didn't get the fifth-year option picked up. And so the Saints are hoping that he can kind of deliver. Now, I think this signing is similar to the Vikings signing Mark Davenport.
Yes.
And that didn't work out for them. His deal was a little bit
different. Yeah.
Yeah, his deal had a little bit more incentives worked into it. I think he ended up earning $11.4 million on that $13 million deal.
Wow.
Yeah, considering he played in like four games.
Exactly.
You know, that's a pretty significant earning. So it, you know, the baseline for what this type of deal is actually reasonable. Because, like, again, you saw this happen last year. But I do think there's probably a little bit more upside with Chase than there was with Marcus. And we'll see. But he fits what the Saints want to do. If this was the 2020 draft and they landed Chase Young, we would be doing cartwheels and backflips celebrating this incredible signing. So I think it does. It gives them, you know, if he lives up to his name and helps elevate this pass rush, and that rotation suddenly becomes like Cam Jordan, Carl Granderson, Chase Young, and Peyton Turner, Isaiah Foskey. That's suddenly a pretty hefty rotation with Brian Brzee, Colin Saunders, Nathan Shepard in the middle. Feel good about it.
Yeah. And nice to see, obviously, Cam Jordan excited over this. And no, he was a little bit a part of the recruiting process.
Yeah. They had a recruit. You know, it's funny. So I think Jordan Schultz tweeted that Tyrann Mathieu was a part of the recruiting dinner. And then someone, I think Mike Triplett, asked Chase Young directly if Tyrann Mathieu was part of the recruiting party, and he said no.
Okay, then.
But it also, I'm just going to play you the clip that I put together from Chase's interview, because you'll understand once you hear it, why it's like, sometimes I'm just like, not a lot of energy, not a lot of enthusiasm with this interview. So let's play that, and then we can come back and talk about it.
Man, just excited to be a Saint, man. You know, just excited to help this team. Grateful, you know, for the opportunity. And, you know, my plan is to make the most of it and, you know, help this team to get to that one common goal.
Chase, welcome to New Orleans. Why the Saints?
Just a culture, man. Just a tradition. You know, just a Saint. It's one of those places that you know, a winning culture, and you know, that's what I wanted to you know, be around, and you know, I feel like this was a place for me.
As a former number two overall selection in the draft, defensive rookie of the year, obviously, you know, your play gets put under a microscope when you're a player of that caliber. What do you think is one of the bigger misconceptions about your game that you're excited to prove here in New Orleans?
Really not excited to prove anything to anybody. I'm just going to go out there and be the best Chase Young I can be.
Is there anything about this defense in particular that appealed to you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we have great defense, Tyron, Cam, you know, Carl, Pete, DeMario. I mean, I feel like it's weapons all over the field. You know, my goal is just going to be the best Chase Young that I can be. And, you know, I definitely, you know, plan to add a good piece to be a part of this defense.
Chase, what was kind of your process of picking your spot? Were you kind of studying everybody and trying to make sure you found the best fit for you? And if so, what made New Orleans the best fit for you?
Yeah, just the best fit is, I feel like it's very family oriented. You know, even just meeting the whole coaching staff, everybody was family oriented. You know, I can tell just the workspace, has great energy. Just everybody walking around the building smiling. So just feeling the energy and really just a place where, you know, I'll come to work in every day.
You know, to take a 1-year deal, I mean, do you kind of see this as a prove it deal, or how do you kind of view the deal?
Prove it. I just prove it as I'm getting another opportunity to show what I can do.
Yeah, Chase, just quick question. You know, this is a team that for whatever reason always seems to gravitate toward Ohio State players, whether through free agency or through the draft. Was that something you were aware of? And do you have any kind of familiarity with, you know, whether Pete, Marshawn, some of these guys, Chris, that have been here, obviously, whether as teammates or whatever?
Yeah, no, you know, Chris and Pete were my teammates. Marshawn, we still good friends. You know, I know all the Cleveland guys. But yeah, man, I mean, you know, they definitely around here, they you know, they talk about how they love Ohio State guys, and you know, I'm glad I can be a part of that.
You mentioned that family oriented feel a few times. Why was that so important to you?
Because I feel like I'm a family man. You know, I like it. You know, I like coming to work every day. I like, you know, talking to my teammates. You know, I just like that good energy throughout the atmosphere.
How familiar are you with sort of the connection between the fan base and the organization here? Obviously, the organization is very entrenched with the history of the city and things like that. Is that something you're excited about as well?
Yeah, definitely. I heard the stadium gets super loud. So I'm real excited for that.
You know, he's one of those guys that ends sentences with so. So you never know when he's, yeah. Like, I don't care. People can talk however they want. I just find that confusing because I never know when their question or their answer, I should say. So see what I mean? See? But no, so like I think what you know he had a long day. I'm not gonna hold that against him. Just a very right. low energy interview, and you know, we talked about this kind of jokingly, but I don't know if it's an Ohio State thing. It does seem like a lot of at least the more modern Ohio State players are very low-key, reserved, quiet in these interviews. Like you go back to Mike Thomas, Marshawn. You know, Pete's not a guy. Pete Werner's got a little bit more enthusiasm, yeah. Character, but even he's like still like not a Pete, not a right. Big media guy. He clearly doesn't enjoy it. You know, Chris Olave's very similar. You know, it's like he'll talk to the media. He understands that it's his job as a leader in that room, but it's like he could. It's very clear that it's like not something that he's looking forward to as he walks in the locker room. Like, ah, great, I get to do this. But you go back to guys like Nick Vanette, Malcolm Jenkins. They're not like that. So I don't know. I just find it interesting. Either way.
No, I mentioned to you too. That's why I was hoping Von Bell would come back. He was a great locker room dude.
Yeah, and I don't say that because it's going to impact how he is on the field, right? Like Marshawn has never been a great media guy, and he's been fantastic. Mike Thomas, right. Same way, right? So there's not a correlation between being really good with the media and being good on the field. It does probably have a correlation between general opinion of you as a member of the team, because right. The better you are with the media, the more – especially like TV, right? The more fluffy you are and the better sound bites you give, the more often you're going to get praised on the sports shows and whatnot. And if you, a lot of people don't care about that. And that's, you know, so sometimes it'll come off that way, but that doesn't mean it affects your play. That said, we're going to go into the locker room all year long. I don't anticipate we'll end up talking to Chase Young a lot. I think it'll be kind of like Jimmy Graham in that we'll end up hearing from him at the podium if he has a big game. But he's never going to be the guy that like walks into the locker room and be like, okay, who wants to talk? You know, that's James Hurst's job.
Or like Cam just, you know, holding shop in front of the TV area with all the video games and stuff they got hanging out, and he'll just prop himself up on the tabletop
for several hours, right? But no, so you know, one thing he said, he's like, I'm just trying to be the best Chase Young I could be, whatever. Like, he's not buying into this prove it narrative, yeah. Or at least he's not making that a part of his narrative. Now, we can say that all we want, and obviously that's the case. Obviously, this is a guy who didn't play well enough on his rookie deal to merit a monster deal in his first foray into free agency, right? Like, that's just a fact. We can debate it, whether that's going to motivate him or not. That's a fact. So he's going into this season with motivation to earn himself a bigger deal, right? That's just how it works when you're on a one-year deal. And he's accepting that. Now, he's not going to say it. So that is what it is. But I think the Saints are betting on him, and he's betting on himself, and he's betting on the Saints. He talked about the energy, the atmosphere in the building. And I do think like people take that for granted sometimes where like he's coming from the Commanders. Like he spent time with the 49ers, obviously, but he spent the first 3+ years of his career with the Commanders. We did a whole episode about the NFLPA grades, right? You know, like the worst team in those grades, back to back years. The only 2 years they've done it were the Commanders. And that's not a coincidence. It's just a poorly run organization. It's not a winning culture. It's not a team that people walk around the building and all these smiling faces, right? They're like, man, when is Dan Snyder going to leave? Or, you know, finally,
he's right.
Yeah. Like there's a difference, right? And, you know, people will kind of roll their eyes. We say, oh, winning culture. But like you go around the league and you talk about teams that have not established a winning culture. And while the Saints have not delivered on expectations the last 2 years, we're complaining about a 9-8 season.
Yep.
Think about that. We're complaining that a 9-8 season wasn't good enough. Now, you have to have a winning culture for that to be a thing, right?
How far the organization's come from the brown bag days, right?
Well, I mean, like, look at the Cardinals. You think the Cardinals would go 9-8 and be like, oh, what a failure, right? Like, the Jaguars went 9-8, and it's a failure because they started, like, 6-1. You know, right. Like, there's a lot of teams that, you know, that would kill for a 9-8 season, and that's the difference between having a winning culture and not having a winning culture. Now, you got to sustain that. You got to build on that. But that's still a reputation that exists. Like, this team wins a lot of games. And, like, even 7-10, like, you could say, well, 7-10, terrible season. That's the low watermark. Like, that's the worst season they've had since 2006.
Right, there's no 2-15 here.
Right. Like, there was 3-7-9 seasons.
Yeah.
But, like, again, like, if you have to go back to 2005 for a season they won fewer than 7 games. So, I mean, like, you can scoff at the winning culture remark, but that's true. This team is trying to go out and win games. You can argue with the way they do it. You can argue with Derek Carr as the best option. You can argue with this. You can argue with that. But you can't argue with the idea that around the NFL, teams and players look at the Saints and say, that's a team that wins a lot of games.
Yeah, I was kind of laughing a little bit when he starts talking about the family atmosphere and everything. I'm like, ooh, the NFLPA card said, don't expect the Saints to get back to your family members if they have questions, though.
but I bet they're still better than the Commanders at that.
Right.
So we'll see. But I like the signing. I think that it's just a good look for the team that they were able to convince this guy who had options to come down here and sign a contract and play for a season and see how it goes. I'm looking forward to it. And I think people are going to be in awe of his physical attributes when they watch him out at camp. Well, if you know, you're not gonna be able to watch him out at camp, but like, right, you're gonna see clips, and because this guy is just a monster of a human being, right? He's exactly the type of player the Saints want. He's underperformed at the NFL level, but you know, I think the traits are all still there. He's beyond the injury. He played 16 games last year, which is a really good sign. You know, because I think that's the first step you have to make. It's like, okay, can you stay healthy? Okay, now that you've proven you can stay healthy, can you deliver? And that's what Marcus wasn't able to do. Marcus got his health back in 2022, but then had half a sack, right? So we need the health and the potential. And what's good for the Saints is he's not going to be overloaded. He's not, because they have a rotation and they have quality players, he's not going to be asked to play 90% of the snaps. And I want to see him get up there and just feast on quarterbacks.
No, so, definitely excited to see him part of this rotation because, like you mentioned at the start of this, the Saints got some players, man, and it's going to be interesting to see how they just manage now all those bodies to go with it. And hopefully this helps, you know, Cam Jordan have a bounce back year too. I know he's been excited on social media about it, and that can only be good things, obviously.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the mock drafts. One thing that it does for me is it pushes defensive end way down the board in terms of need. Like, you can still draft a defensive end if a guy you love falls to you.
Sure.
But in terms of, like, going in the first round and being like, man, got to go get me a D end, I feel a little different about that right now. Going just really quick on Cedric Wilson, you know, I know people aren't excited about Cedric Wilson. I do think that, you know, you're talking about a guy who is a veteran in a room that you need a veteran in. Mm-hmm. And he's a guy who understands the offense that you're going to be involving and in introducing. And that's big. And so here's just a couple clips from Cedric. This is on talking to Clint Kubiak.
Just the overall factor of just be a vet and make sure I need you to stay on the lookout for small things and make sure that I'm coming to work every day being a veteran that the younger players need to see, but at the same time showing that I can compete and that's going to bring the best out of everybody.
And I think that's important, right? Like, you needed to bring in somebody who A, could contribute, but also B, could be a veteran leader, could help, you know, some of these young guys, because you've lost that. You know, at least, you know, you had Mike Thomas in that role, and whether you feel like he was doing that job well or not,
yeah,
you need that veteran presence. And it has to be from a guy who is expected to contribute. Like, you could bring in a Keith Kirkwood and say he's our veteran and he's going to help these young guys. And that works to a point, but you also have to go out and prove it. It's like, why am I listening to you if I don't think that you are on my level and you can actually do the things that you're telling me I need to do, right? And it's nothing against Keith Kirkwood. It's just that I think as a young player, you need to hear it from somebody who has had a lot of success. Yeah, in this league.
Absolutely.
Or at least has had a certain level of success. And, you know, you can say Cedric Wilson hasn't done a ton. He did have a 48 catch season, 600 yards, 6 touchdowns in Dallas, and that's what got him the deal in Miami.
Right.
You know, so he has proven that he can do it. And I think that's kind of the veteran you probably want. Now, I'd still like to see them add one or two more. I think you're going to wait this out and you're going to bring in Hunter Renfrow on a low-level deal. I think that's what you're going to do. And if you're the Saints, you're not willing to go above a certain level with a Hunter Renfrow. But it's kind of like Jarvis Landry, right? Remember how they brought it? They waited. Everyone's like, why not bring in Jarvis Landry? Why not bring in Jarvis Landry? Like, just hold up. Just wait. Because why? They don't need to do it now. Why would you do it now? You can wait till after June. And use some of that extra cap space you can free up with the post-June 1 moves. So there's really no reason. And the longer you wait, the more team-friendly that deal is going to become. Because if you're still on the market in June, that means there wasn't much of a market to begin with. So I still think you're going to do that. But I do appreciate the Cedric Wilson of it all in the sense that, you know, you're installing a new offense. And this is a significant, significant burden. And this is a guy who understands that offense, who can help communicate some of this stuff to Rashid Shaheed, to Chris Olave, to even, you know, the running backs, even Alvin Kamara and Kendre Miller, guys who also have a lot of new responsibilities. So here's a little bit more from Cedric before we move on.
I feel like this offense just fits every different type of receiver, whether you're fast, whether you're tall. It definitely opens up the game for any unique skill set. And I found I've never played in the West Coast offense until I got there. And then it took me 2 years to kind of finally get comfortable. And now I kind of know what I like to do in it.
And I think that's the big part of this. And it's the same reason, like, you look at Nathan Peterman. Why did they bring in Nathan Peterman? It wasn't because they were like, oh, blown away by the ability of this guy as a backup quarterback. It's because he can bridge the gap between Derek Carr, Andrew Janoco, because he's been a teammate with Derek Carr. He's worked with Andrew Janoco, the new quarterback's coach, right? And a big element of this offseason is going to be smoothing out that road and for getting all of this information communicated, getting the new tenets of this offense picked up as smoothly as possible. And if he can help with that in any respect, then that adds value for him, even if you never intend to put him on the field.
Yeah, obviously the only issue there is we haven't seen Peterman have any success.
But I don't need him to have success.
I hear you. I know he's kind of like the go-between.
I just, like, again, it's not about playing him.
Right.
It's about having him in the room so that your starting quarterback and even the backup that probably is going to be the backup is that you're able to kind of communicate that, right? Like, it's not about everyone looks at this the wrong way and they say, well, why are we bringing in this low-end backup quarterback option? They don't want to challenge Derek Carr. Well, who brings in backup quarterbacks to challenge their intended starter to begin with, first of all? Like, that's just nonsense. Like, yeah, sure, you bring in Justin Fields to compete with Russell Wilson. You weren't bringing in, like, you know, Jacoby Brissett to compete with Tom Brady. Now, I'm not comparing Derek Carr to Tom Brady. I'm just saying when you're bringing in a backup quarterback, it's not about, what if they have to play? Especially in this case, because you want Jake Hayner to be your backup quarterback anyway. So you're bringing in a third string quarterback. And what is the value of a third string quarterback if they never get on the field? Well, if they can help you install a new offense, there's value. And it's the same thing with Cedric.
It's funny you bring that up because on NFL Network this morning on Good Morning Football, someone brought up, do you think Kenny Pickett can challenge Jalen Hurts for starting snaps? And my head almost snapped. I was like, what?
I don't know why the Eagles went. If you're going to bring in a backup quarterback, why not just bring in Justin Fields?
For the cheap that he got, that he was available for sure.
Yeah, and like they were like, well, the Steelers just wanted to send Justin where he wanted to go. Like, you want to go to Pittsburgh?
You sure?
Same state. So if you wanted to be in Pennsylvania, you could have gone with the Eagles. And the Eagles clearly were ready to trade for a quarterback because they traded for Kenny Pickett.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
Maybe the Eagles, I think the Eagles operate in a way that's like, how can we get the fans excited? Right? I really do. I think that that's how they manage player personnel.
I don't find anything about Pickett exciting.
He's from Pennsylvania. He went to Pittsburgh.
I thought they showed him in an Eagles jersey already when he was a kid. And I'm like, whoopity doo.
Yeah, but that's why the Steelers picked him.
Right.
If Kenny Pickett went to Hawaii, he would have never ended up in Pittsburgh. That's why they drafted him. And I think that's why the Eagles traded for him. Because they're like, oh, people are going to be so excited to go buy a Kenny Pickett jersey.
Oof.
And it's like, that's why they draft all the Georgia guys. Like, oh, people are going to get excited because they know this name. Like, it's people, everyone applauds the Eagles and Howie and how all that gets done. I think it's bullshit. I really do. I think he lucked into a lot of good players. And the way he manages draft assets is good. That's the only thing he does well.
Well, the big one for me as an Eagles fan, he missed the Justin Jefferson. That was a huge swing and miss. And they ended up,
Jalen Reagor.
Yeah, that was completely horrible. Obviously, they made up for that, you know, getting an A.J. Brown on the roster. But yeah, Justin Jefferson, there is no comparison in the NFL right now.
Yeah, no, and because they manage their assets the way they do, they are able to make moves in obvious situations that other teams aren't able to. Like, when they have all of these draft assets, they can be adjustable. And that's the true victory of the Eagles. Player scouting and their player personnel is not that good.
They miss a lot. Have Gardner Johnson back, at least.
Wait, they could have just signed him anyway.
Yeah.
Why'd they have him leave?
I don't know what happened there, right?
They paid him this year. Yep. What's different now?
An injury, right.
Exactly. So we'll see. But all right, let's wrap up this segment. We're going to come back. We're going to run through these mock drafts really quick, and then we will get out of your hair before the Saints sign somebody else, and we have to do this all again. So who dat? This is Inside Black Gold. I'm Jeff Nowak. He's Steve Geller. We'll be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Back on Inside Black and Gold. I'm Jeff Nowak. He is Steve Geller. It's mock draft time. We're gonna do it.
Everyone's been waiting forever.
We've been teasing this. Been teasing this one for quite some time. But all right, without further ado, we're gonna start with Steve's. We're gonna go through Steve's here, and then we're gonna hit mine in the final segment, and then we're gonna leave. And have you all think about what you've done. All right, so let me share my screen here. We're going to do two rounds because we would do three, but the Saints don't have a third round pick. So I think next time what I want to do is do a trade, like a trade mock. So yeah. That like have one of us trade up, have one of us trade down and kind of see how that develops. But for this one, we're not doing any trades. So we're just doing the first two rounds. We're going to talk through them. But all right, let's get yours up here. So if you're listening to this and you'd like to follow along with the actual picks, feel free to go check it out on YouTube. And that'll be a much easier way for you to kind of have an idea of what we're talking about.
Yeah, obviously, with the computer picking, there's some questions in there.
Yeah, remember, we do this on Pro Football Focus. So we don't pick. We're only picking for the Saints. So if you think this is a dumb pick and you're like, well, why would they do this? Keep in mind that we are not making these decisions. So if Zach Strief is mad that we didn't pick a Northwestern offensive tackle, he can take it up with
the PFF, for sure.
The PFF, yeah. So just keep that in mind. So this first one, like we did last time, we can go through the list a little bit more. And then, because we kind of get an idea of like, okay, Caleb Williams, Drake May. This mock has decided that J.J. McCarthy is going to the Patriots. Something about the state of Michigan, these weirdos. So nothing surprising. Caleb Williams, number one, Drake May, number two, to the Commanders. But yeah, then instead of Jaden Daniels, you have J.J. McCarthy. Now, in the state of Louisiana, that is just, you know, heresy. You would never hear anyone say that. Now, I don't know. I don't know how it's tough, right? And I've said this previously, because we're in Louisiana, I think we do have kind of a skewed perspective on the belief that Jaden Daniels is a top three quarterback. Right. And that maybe that's not true elsewhere. Maybe that is a very strongly held belief in Louisiana, but New England, maybe that's different. I don't know. That said, I don't buy the J.J. McCarthy hype personally.
I'm just shocked that he went over quite a number of other quarterbacks.
Yeah, right. And so I do think it's interesting. And I do think the Patriots have to pick a quarterback or trade. I do not think that, you know, I actually talked to a Patriots fan because I'm in Patriots country right now. And big Patriots fan, like not a kind of, you know, fly by the seat of your pants because he pays really close attention. And he was saying, like, I want Marvin Harrison. I was like, really? You don't have a quarterback. Who's going to throw him the ball? And he's like, we'll figure that out. I'm like, will you?
Wow. And Brissette trust.
He was big on Marvin Harrison. He wanted Marvin Harrison. And I was surprised. But I think that would be crazy. But we'll see. You know, like, either way, I do think that it's going to be quarterback number three, whether it's J.J. McCarthy or Jaden Daniels.
Right.
I think if the Patriots pick a guy, pick a quarterback at number three, or they trade down. I just don't see a scenario where you draft a wide receiver at number three without a quarterback.
And to me, I mean, there's no guarantee that Jaden doesn't go number two, and then maybe Drake May goes three to the Patriots. But I do believe 1, 2, 3 is going to be quarterback.
Right. That's kind of where I'm getting at. Yeah. However you split it up and whoever ends up making those picks, I do think that 1, 2, 3 is going to be a quarterback.
Yeah.
And that's why the Cardinals taking Marvin Harrison Jr., I think makes sense.
Absolutely.
Now the Chargers are weird, because I think the reason that the J.J. McCarthy pick at number three is confusing to me is because I do think that if J.J. McCarthy gets to number five, he goes at number five, because Jim Harbaugh is going to want his guy.
Really? Huh? Even with obviously Herbert there?
I think you maybe trade Herbert.
Damn.
But either way, like I don't know.
Well, that's a draft hot take. I like that.
But wouldn't you? You'd get a killing if you want to kind of reset. And I think the Chargers need to reset.
Oh yeah, you would.
And you really believe in J.J. McCarthy?
We mentioned on Sports Talk. You want to talk about cap hell? Look what the Chargers have had to do.
Because they haven't done it well. Because they haven't done it with a plan. They've just kind of gone willy nilly. And I do think you know, you're probably not ready to win this year. And what is your best asset that you can really reset the deck with and get multiple first rounders? You can take your guy, the guy that works with Jim Harbaugh, that Jim Harbaugh loves and can help him install and take over that locker room. And then you can get multiple first rounders, like a team like, you know, maybe even the Patriots, right? Like, what can you get from the Patriots? Can you get number three overall from the Patriots? Draft Marvin Harrison Jr. and J.J. McCarthy. Get a second round pick, take Roman Wilson. Like, I don't know. Like, I could see that happening. Either way, this is your mock and I'm taking it over, so I feel bad.
Like we said, though, PFF kind of like lays it out for us.
In this mock, Rome Odunze goes to the Chargers at number five. The Giants take Malik Nabers at number six. I think that's the right pick for them. I think you need to get Daniel Jones a receiver. Dallas Turner to the Titans at number seven. Joe Alt to the Falcons at number eight. So keep in mind, Jaden Daniels is still on the board. And obviously the Falcons would have been an interesting landing spot for Jaden Daniels, but they've signed Kirk Cousins. So now that would be a real tough one to sell to the fan base.
You could tell them learning behind Kirk, I guess.
Yeah, but you signed Kirk to a 4-year deal.
Right. That's the kind of wild part.
Yeah. So like, you know, you, instead of getting Kurt Joalt, an offensive lineman that can help him immediately, you draft a quarterback who's meant to supplant him. If you were in year three of that deal, I would feel differently. You literally just signed him. So that would be a bold, bold move to undermine the quarterback that agreed to come play with you in the same offseason that you signed him. So I think the quarterback is off the table for the Falcons, at least in the first round, maybe third round, right. You know, maybe third, fourth round where you're getting a veteran or a depth guy. Cause you did trade Desmond Ridder. So you probably do need to get a, you know, so I don't know, but yeah, definitely not Jaden Daniels on the board. Jared Verse to the Bears, Taliese Fuanga to the Jets at number 10, then Jaden Daniels to the Vikings. This makes a lot of sense.
Right.
Quinyon Mitchell to the Broncos at number 12. Brock Bowers to the Raiders at number 13. And I have
been falling to me a lot in mocks.
I have a feeling this is what kind of threw you off and sent you in another direction. Because I have a feeling you would have gone with Brock if he had gotten one more pick. But instead, sure. who did you go with and why?
I went on the defensive line instead of tackle. I was like, you know what? DA is a defensive-minded guy. I'm going to go stick with that defense since we just beefed it up recently in free agency at Chase Young, and I wanted to add more to that D-line, a guy I think that could contribute pass rush and run stuff in Byron Murphy II from Texas. But I will say Latham was definitely, like, right there as well, just decided to mix it up a little and go defense instead.
Yeah, you say you didn't go tackle, but you did go tackle. You just went defensive tackle. And no, I like whether it's a guy like Tavondre Sweat or anybody, like I love the idea of adding another kind of blue chip defensive tackle and having that kind of Brian Brzee, whoever first round D tackle pairing, like really kind of feast. Cause like you got to build, you know, you can win a lot of different ways, but one of the most consistent ways you've seen teams win at a high level is by pressuring the quarterback. Right.
Man.
And, you know, like there's a lot of mobile quarterbacks now that make it a little more difficult. But the fact of the matter is, if you can crush a quarterback in the pocket and force him to have to beat you at the edges of the field, you're going to win a lot of games that way, particularly in the NFC South, because you're going to have to go beat Kirk Cousins and Baker Mayfield. Right. Like that's so I don't hate that idea of really kind of beefing up, making it so they cannot run and then forcing them in third and medium, third and long. And feast in that way. So I agree. It's going to take a lot of cojones to send that card up their defensive tackle. Cause it's not going to be a popular pick and everyone's going to hate it, but I don't hate the idea.
Although I wonder that too, with Saints fans, you know, talk about complaining. If they end up going offensive lineman again, are people going to flip out about that?
No, because I think people have kind of come around to the fact that it's a need. It's a need. But defensive tackle, you don't. It's more of a luxury pick than a need pick, because you went first round defensive tackle last year.
Correct. Right.
But those are tough. Like defensive tackles, you know, you can find defensive tackles in the second, third, fourth round, but not those like top end defensive tackles. Like you look at Aaron Donald, and he retired. Right. 10 years in, he retired. Like the careers aren't that long. You don't have a ton of time to develop them. There's only so many like 300-pound dancing bears on the planet, you know. And Aaron Donald was number 11, 12. Like he was not a top five, top 10 pick. So you can find guys in that range. You can find those elite guys in that range because, like we just talked about, a lot of times teams will get too caught up in it's not a sexy pick,
right?
You know. But you need those.
You think about all those teams now kicking themselves for once in a generational talent in an Aaron Donald, like you're talking about. I'm obviously not saying, you know, Byron's that way.
Right. So let's just go kind of run through the rest of this round. Saints don't pick again until 45. A lot of tackles
start going now.
Yeah. Saints don't pick again until 45. So we can just kind of run through these. But yeah, so you didn't go offensive tackle. And if you felt like, hey, we can just wait till 45 and try to get this guy.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, you are kicking yourself now, because 15, J.C. Latham goes to the Colts. Terrion Arnold, cornerback from Alabama, goes to the Seahawks. Then two tackles in a row. Toi Fatanu out of Washington goes to the Jags. George's Amarius Mims goes to the Bengals. Another cornerback, Nate Wiggins, to the Rams. Olu Fashanu, which he's a guy who I've heard a lot in the top 10. And this one, he drops all the way to 20. I think you're going to have a hard time passing on Olu if he gets there at 14. But goes to the Steelers at 20. Brian Thomas Jr. to the Dolphins at 21. Cooper DeJean to the Eagles. Tyler Guyton, another tackle, to the Vikings. Leitu Latu to the Cowboys. Adonai Mitchell, wide receiver out of Texas, goes to the Packers. Jackson Powers Johnson, really highly touted interior line prospect, can play all three spots, goes to the Bucks at 26. They desperately need offensive linemen, interior linemen specifically, so that makes sense. Darius Robinson goes in the first round. This is one that I'm interested. He could go, I could see him going as high as top 15. He ends up at 27. I know you did a mock the other day that had him at 45. So like, I think
couldn't believe it.
The variation on him is really interesting.
Yes.
Jajon Newton, another D tackle, goes to the Bills. Chop Robinson, another guy I'm kind of mixed on, goes to the Lions at 29. Kool-Aid McKinstry to the Ravens at 30. Graham Barton to the 49ers, another tackle. And then Kingsley.
Yeah, I don't know much about Graham.
I don't either. These kind of middle tier guys are tougher to gauge. And then Kingsley Suamataya.
Great pronunciation. BYU
goes to the Chiefs. So that's the end of the first round. Then Panthers start off with Ennis Rakestraw Jr. And keep in mind, Panthers, worst team in the NFL, have not made a pick yet.
Right.
Isn't that crazy? Like, you think, like, wow, what's the benefit of being the worst team in the NFL?
Oh, we got the top pick.
We got the top pick in the second round. Yeah. Great. Enjoy it, Ennis Rakestraw Jr.
And that's the pick they make here, right?
It's a fun name. I'm going to enjoy saying Ennis Rakestraw. And they need defensive backs. They need to rebuild their defense. They traded Brian Burns. You know, it's clear that their emphasis in free agency has been to build up the offense and the team around Bryce Young, which is the correct approach. But that just means you have to invest draft assets in defensive players. So anyway, Florida State's Keon Coleman goes to the Patriots. Xavier Worthy, the fast guy, goes to the Cardinals. They just love their fast dudes. They don't have Hollywood Brown anymore, so that makes sense. Safety Tyler Newbin to the Commanders. Wide receiver Troy Franklin to the Chargers at number 37 overall. Braylon Trice, edge rusher out of Washington, goes to the Titans. Edgerrin Cooper, linebacker, goes to the Panthers. So they traded up with the Giants. That's the Brian Burns pick that they just added. TJ Tampa, cornerback out of Iowa State, goes to Washington. Jordan Morgan, another tackle. I was thinking he might drop to 45, because I think if he's there at 45, that's a really good tackle pick you can make. He's with the Packers at 41. Chris Braswell, edge rusher out of Alabama, goes to the Texans at 42. Kamari Lassiter, cornerback out of Georgia, goes to the Falcons. Peyton Wilson, NC State linebacker, goes to the Raiders. And at number 45, the Saints select.
Dun, dun, dun. I think Saints fans rejoice right now.
You got to say it. This is an audio podcast.
Michael Penix from Washington is headed to the New Orleans Saints, courtesy of the trade from Sean Payton going to the Denver Broncos. So a pick 45, the Saints get a quarterback. More talent to compete in the QB room.
Yeah, I don't hate this pick. It's tough because, you know, you what do you do with the guy? So you now have four quarterbacks. But I do think that you probably do need to start if you really like Michael Penix and he's there.
Right.
I think you could definitely sell me on it. That said, you know, there's a lot of intriguing names still on the board here.
Oh, yeah.
And you'd have to tell me, well, no, we don't need Mike Sanders still. We don't need the top slot corner in the draft, even though he's available. We don't need Roman Wilson, who I would argue is a first-round prospect, a wide receiver in any other draft. And this is just a draft with a ton of first-round wide receiver talent. He's a Senior Bowl guy. The Saints got a good look at him. He was feasting at the Senior Bowl. Hmm. So, you know, that's the, you know, and then Bo Nix is still there too.
I went Penix over Nix.
Yeah, you could tell me that they are in love with either guy. I think lefty hurts Penix more than helps him. Cause like when you're talking, like it's silly, but at the same time, everything flips when you have a left-handed quarterback. Your right tackle becomes your left tackle because your right tackle is now the blind side, you know? And I think it's just, it's not for nothing. Like it does change things. And so if you're asking it's hard to have a lefty quarterback be your backup quarterback for a right-handed quarterback.
That's interesting, right?
No, seriously, because he's going to go in the game and suddenly everything has to flip. And like you can practice that and it's not the end of the world, but it does require a lot of changes for how you operate. And so like that's a lot of work for the – I don't think it's going to prevent you from drafting a Michael Penix.
Sure. No, it's obviously the biggest question with him is his health.
Yeah. Right. He doesn't have clean medicals.
No.
And so, you know, that's, I don't think it's going to prevent you from drafting a guy either, but it is a factor. So we don't need to go through the rest of the second round. Nothing particularly exciting, but how do you feel about your picks?
Definitely felt like my second round was more for the fans than anything. I'm not sure if obviously, yeah, just because I don't know what the future for Penix really holds in the NFL, and just surprised to really see him having dropped so far when he was considered a lock for the first round before the college football playoff, definitely, and then seemed to just plummet afterwards. And like the pick on the defensive line for sure, just for the fact that, yeah, like I mentioned to you, the defense is Dennis Allen's main bag. And if you want to create that dominant feel around this squad, I think you have a better chance on that defensive side of the ball than you do offensively, obviously.
And again, I agree, like in the sense that when you can't stop the run, you can't stop anything.
Yeah.
And I think there were too many games this past season where the Saints were not good enough against the run. And you can say, well, Breeze is going to get better.
Really?
Yeah. Well, and you've invested in that position, right? Like you've rebuilt the defensive interior. I think Colin Saunders, Nathan Shepard got better as the season went on. I think Breeze got better as the season went on. So you could also sell me on the fact that it's like, hey, we think we have the bodies here and we just need to continue to play well like we did late in the year. But that said, you know, you did lose Malcolm Roach. There should be some rotational space to be had. So I agree with that. So again, defensive tackle Byron Murphy the second out of Texas at number 14, then quarterback Michael Penix at number 45 out of Washington would be the top two picks there. I don't hate him. You could definitely sell me on that route. Anything you want to add before we move on?
No, just looking forward, obviously coming up eventually LSU's pro day, and just want to see more of what Jaden Daniels is going to do, because he didn't really nothing at the combine.
Yeah. It's funny. You know, these mock drafts, right? I think the mock drafts get a lot more caught up in like, oh, he didn't work out, so I don't have any information. And so I'm going to drop him, even though it's like, that's not what teams are going to do. As annoyed as they are, because it's like, none of the top quarterbacks worked out. What does Jaden have to prove? You want to hide him?
Some of the mock draft simulators are absolutely absurd. And that's, I found PFF was like at least a little bit more in the realm that I thought was realistic.
Yeah. Don't get too worked up about like, I don't agree with this, because it's a thought exercise. That's all it is.
Yeah, right. But like number one on whatever site it was, all of a sudden you had Marvin Harrison Jr. going number one. I'm like, that's not going to happen. Come on.
But all right, let's wrap this segment up. I'm Jeff Nowak, Steve Geller. We just went through Steve's mock draft, Byron Murphy, Michael Penix at 14 and 45 respectively. We're going to come back and go through my mock draft. Keep it locked up inside. We're back on Inside Black and Gold. One more segment from this kitchen in Connecticut. And we're going to go through, we spent the last segment going through Steve's mock draft. This time we're going to go through my mock, which is different. Best thing I can say about it.
We'll see how PFF, the computer shakes out for you.
Yeah. All right. So let's flash it up here. It's going to look very similar. All right. So in this one, yeah, so
that
it's
looks right
at the
to
top.
Me.
Right, we talked a lot about, oh, Jaden Daniels, is he really going to drop all the way down there? No, in this mock draft, it's Caleb Williams at number one, which I think we can all agree on. Jaden Daniels to the Commanders at number two, and then Drake May to the Patriots at number three. So again, like we said, I think a lot of us could probably agree that the top three picks are going to be quarterbacks. It's just a question of, A, what order are they going to be in past Caleb Williams? And B, what teams are they going to be? Now that the Bears have traded Justin Fields, there's no question as to whether they might trade the top pick.
Right.
So I think that's going to be the Bears. The Commanders desperately need a quarterback, so they're going to probably stick at number two. The Patriots also desperately need a quarterback, but they seem like a team that would be stupid enough to trade out and take somebody else.
We're bringing Jimmy G back. Oh, no, I forget where he went.
They'll figure it out. Yeah. But anyway, so in this one, so we have a couple changes, right? So instead of Marvin Harrison to the Cardinals at number four, you have Malik Nabers to the Cardinals at number four. I personally think Malik Nabers is the best wide receiver in this draft. But as we've said, we may be speaking through Louisiana colored glasses here. Either way, in this one, Marvin Harrison goes to the Chargers at number six, or sorry, number five, and the Giants take JJ McCarthy at number six. Now, this would be the most recent annoying quarterback they've taken at number six. They also took Daniel Jones at number six overall. And I just think Daniel Jones and JJ McCarthy are the same guy. You know, like he's a sneaky athletic quarterback. You know, he's never going to blow you away with his arm strength, but he's very accurate. It's the same guy. And I personally would be as a back burner Giants fan would be very disappointed if they took JJ McCarthy. That's all I'm going to say. Like, I don't know why JJ McCarthy, after years of everyone being like, meh, has suddenly become a top 10 pick.
Right.
I don't buy it. I really don't. It reminds me of Zach Wilson flying up draft boards. You know, we've seen this happen. Like, I don't see it. I really don't. Yeah, like Mitch Trubisky, right? Number two overall. I was like, why is Mitch Trubisky number two overall? I couldn't figure it out then. And now it's like, yeah, well, I still can't figure it out why he went number two overall, right? Like, every year we have one of these quarterbacks that everyone just convinces themselves is the guy. And there's never a good argument. Like, he wasn't even good in college. They ran the ball. Anyway.
Well, and they do have Drew Lock now on the roster, along with Tommy DeVito.
I don't know.
To me, McCarthy doesn't make any sense here, right?
No, especially because you could get a Roma. Like, to me, okay, so, and this is not, people aren't here to hear my takes on the Giants, but I think you've invested in that quarterback, right? You'd be crazy to not at least let it play out.
Yeah.
Because you just, why? Why wouldn't you? And so it seems like the Giants this year have kind of invested more in, hey, we signed a guard. We signed a guy that can protect him. We built up the defensive line. And I think you're in year two of that deal. You're not in year four. You're in year two. And you have never given Daniel Jones as the Giants a wide receiver.
Right.
You have not. You tried with Kenny Galladay.
Right.
You tried with Kenny Galladay. And that was an unmitigated disaster. And it wasn't Daniel Jones's fault. That was a Kenny Galladay problem. If you're not going to, let's put it this way. You have the same GM as Joe Shane. If the same guy who had the bright idea to sign Daniel Jones to this huge contract last year says this year, I changed my mind, we're not going to do this. After what? Like, after you couldn't protect him and he took a shit ton of sacks and then got hurt. Fire the GM at the same time. Right? Because that guy doesn't deserve to have his job if he's going to go back on his own decision a year later,
right?
Based on nothing but a guy getting hurt and not playing well through the first six games on a team that sucked. Fire the GM, fire the coach, start over. Don't tell me that we're going to draft JJ McCarthy, right? Like, that's, I think that's terrible. I think you get him a wide receiver. And if he still can't get it done with a true number one wide receiver, then fine. Then do what you got to do. You're heading into year three of that deal. You're going to have some outs. Taking JJ McCarthy at number six cannot be the answer for the Giants.
Somebody who took Kadarius Toney still in charge over there. I don't know.
No, they're not. They're not. That was Gettleman's last pick.
I gotcha. Okay.
And they took Kadarius Toney because they traded back with the Bears traded up to take Justin Fields. They traded up with the Giants. The Giants traded back, ended up with Kadarius Toney.
Wow.
And it wasn't a terrible trade. Again, like, you have to disassociate trades from the execution of the trade. Because yeah, the trade itself, I think, was good. The pick was bad. But at the time, I would have told you I want Kadarius Toney. So anyway. moving on. Roma Dunze to the Titans at number seven. Joe Alt to the Falcons. Both mocks have Joe Alt going to the Falcons. I think that makes a lot of sense based on everything they've done. Dallas Turner gets to the Bears at number nine. There's your guy, Byron Murphy.
Turner was one that was falling to me sometimes in drafts that I was considering, but that was also before Chase Young.
Yeah, with Chase Young, it makes it a lot more difficult for me to sign off on an edge rusher. Yeah. Byron Murphy, the guy you picked, goes off at number 10. So if you're wondering about the value of your pick, this mock draft, you went even higher. So cool. To the Jets.
Right.
Jared Verse, another guy that's been popular for the Saints, to the Vikings at number 11. Terrion Arnold to the Broncos at number 12. J.C. Latham, offensive tackle, to the Raiders at number 13. So you can see there's some variation in, like, the value of these guys.
Yeah,
Jets, that's one of the higher picks I've seen for J.C. Latham, although he went number 15 in yours. So I was conflicted here. I was conflicted. But at the end of the day, I stuck with my
picking 1.0, which is Taliese Fuanga, the offensive tackle. I like Ryan Ramczyk. I don't have any faith in Ryan Ramczyk beyond this year. Taliese Fuanga is a run-blocking, road-grading, gigantic behemoth of a right tackle. Now, I don't know what he profiles at in terms of can he maybe play inside? Can he maybe shift over to be the left tackle if you need it? I don't know, but I really love his game, and I love the ability to get him here. He was already gone by the time you picked in your mock draft. In both of the ones I've done, he has been there. He's at the Senior Bowl, check. I don't know. I think he makes a lot of sense, even if he doesn't play right away. The other guy that I'm really, you know, and you could have sold me on any of these four guys. Yeah. I was very interested in all four of these picks that get made from 14 to 17. So I took Fuanga. Quinyon Mitchell, cornerback out of Toledo, went to the Colts at 15. I love that guy. I honestly would be surprised if he's on the board at 14 and the Saints don't take him. But it would be a question of what's the value there.
Yeah.
And are you really sell? If the Saints take Quinyon Mitchell at 14, then Marshawn should just start packing.
Absolutely.
You know, because I'm not convinced they definitely trade him, but if they spend a first round pick on a cover press man corner,
what are you gonna already you going to trade a Debo?
No, but a Debo is in a contract year. So what if you can't hash out a long term deal?
Gotcha.
And so it gives the Saints leverage as opposed to giving a Debo leverage. And I don't know, like you'll figure it out, but you definitely are not keeping Marshawn if you are adding a third guy to that mix, a third elite guy to that mix, not an Ike Adam. You're adding a number 14 overall pick to that mix. So to me, like people are like, oh, they let Ike Adam walk. That means they're sticking with Marshawn. I don't think those two things are related, but I do think drafting Quinyon Mitchell at number 14 would be related to what Marshawn's future is. Either way, he makes way too much sense for the Saints.
Do you think they're locked in then on Alante as the slot?
Well, we'll see. Right. Like, again, if they take Quinyon Mitchell, maybe that they do push him back there. But I don't know. Either way, right. Like he was at the Senior Bowl. He dominated the Senior Bowl. And he's a guy like you talk about. Why can't they just look at stuff on tape? The way Toledo played didn't give you a ton of tape about what you're going to ask him to do at the NFL level, but you saw him at the Senior Bowl doing the things that the Saints would ask him to do, and he was starring in that role. So to me, that's a good, like you wonder, it's like, well, why are these scouting events important? You have all of this tape. Well, sometimes the tape doesn't show you everything because not all the teams play the same way that you're going to play. So anyway, then Olu Fashanu at number 16. Again, this is a guy that you could slot him in at 14 instead of Fuanga, yeah. And I would be like, yeah, good idea. Like you could sell me on both of those guys. Then Brock Bowers at 17. I would love Brock Bowers. I really would. Like I would not be upset at all if you skipped a tackle and went Brock Bowers here. But from a practicality standpoint, that would if that didn't work out, you would get hammered. If like your offensive line is struggling and Brock isn't delivering, you look back at that pick in 2 years and be like, why? That was just dumb. So I don't know. But either way, any of those four picks I'd be fine with. I went with Fuanga because he's the one I know the most about. I've talked to him. I like his approach. And I think he kind of fills what you need in terms of, okay, we don't know what we're going to get out of Ryan this year and beyond. If we lose Ryan, like there's a very, like you say, like, well, you don't need a right tackle right now. But what happens if Ryan Ramczyk gets through week 12 and then suddenly his knee gives out on him? Like you're going to be thanking your lucky stars that you invested in a premium right tackle option. And I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I don't know how easy it is to regenerate cartilage.
It's physically impossible. Steve. Medically. He's not a lizard. You know, he's not like an iguana or gecko. You know, they like drop their tail as like a defense mechanism.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think that's maybe we could like inject some lizard DNA into that knee. But then you get into like the whole Spider-Man villain territory, and that's not what you want.
Well, I mean, if it helps out Ramchek's knee, I'm all for it. He can have the villain arc.
Yeah, as long as he turns into the lizard guy after he retires. But again, maybe that's the 2025 season. You don't know where you're going to get. So like, yeah, you might get through the 2024 season by like splicing Ryan Ramczyk's with Lizard's DNA. But then in 2025, he's going to be terrorizing the city and you're going to have to find something else. You're going to have to find another option. So that's just, you know, just thinking practically, I think that's why you would probably go with right tackle at number 14.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And we can debate whether, you know, Andrew Garfield or Tom Holland or Tobey Maguire should be the one that takes care of the long-term issues. but that's a problem. That's a bridge we can cross later on. Okay, good.
We've gotten our Marvel fix.
Yeah. I think it's just being realistic. But all right, so we'll just go through the rest really quickly.
You got to run on tackles too now.
Yep, Nate. Well, I mean, we've already gotten the tackles. We got two already, and then we get two more coming up. So Nate Wiggins to the Bengals at 18. I think that was the same in both. Amarius Mims to the Rams at 19. Troy Fitanu out of Washington to the Steelers. Leitu Latu, edge rusher to the Dolphins. He's another one that was pretty popular to the Saints, but I think with Chase Young in the fold, kind of loses some steam. Cooper DeJean, another guy who I could see the Saints looking at. Maybe if he got to 45, if maybe he fell, I could see them doing that. Maybe they trade into the back end of the first. I don't think it's probably unlikely, but to the Eagles at 22, Cooper DeJean. Tyler Guyton to the Vikings at 23. Brian Thomas Jr. to the Cowboys. Chop Robinson to the Packers at 25. Jackson Powers Johnson to the Bucks at 26. This is the same in both mocks. Graham Barton to the Cardinals at 27. Kool-Aid McKinstry to the Bills. Kamari Lassiter, cornerback out of Georgia to the Lions. Xavier Worthy, the fastest man at the combine ever, to the Ravens at 30. Darius Robinson, again, so you're seeing this guy's value fluctuate significantly. Still doesn't get out of the first round. It goes to the 49ers at 31. Yeah. It makes sense because they let Chase Young walk, but they're still going to have a need for a big body, like defensive end. Then Ladd McConkey, the final pick of the first round to the Chiefs. He does seem like a Pat Mahomes type guy. Start of the first round or first pick of the second round, Braylon Trice, edge rusher to the Panthers. Makes sense. They're trying to try to, you know, replace Brian Burns. Jerzon Newton, defensive tackle to the Patriots. Adonai Mitchell to the Cardinals, wide receiver out of Texas. Ennis Rakestraw Jr., cornerback.
Good old Rakestraw.
Mr. Rakestraw. Peyton Wilson, linebacker, goes to the Chargers at 37. Keon Coleman, Titans, wide receiver out of Florida State. Mike Sanristo,
that popped up on me a few times as a possibility in the second round, Coleman.
Keon? Yeah, he's an interesting guy. I don't know. Like, and I think if you're looking for a wide receiver for the Saints, you're looking for a very specific wide receiver, and we're going to get into that in a second. Mike Sanristo was my pick in the first mock, okay? Okay. He's going to the Panthers here at number 39, and I will draw your attention back to the first mock. PFF gave me an F for this pick, an F minus, if I recall. It gave me the lowest grade possible. It was like, you are reaching. He's a fourth round pick. Well, what's changed? Anyway, like, so PFF is making this pick, not me, but apparently this is no longer an F pick. So, like, that's the thing. Like, don't look at these grades and say, well, they gave me an F, so that means I'm wrong. Because this, they don't know. These grades mean nothing. The only thing the grades mean is you took a guy that PFF had rated low and you took him higher than they would have suggested.
But
PFF isn't always right. And clearly they've adjusted to the point that they're taking Mike Sanders still higher than I took him at a point where they gave me an F. So anyway, that's just my, again, like, don't overreact. Like, oh, they gave me an A. That means I'm right. Okay. Kingsley Suamataya, Commanders. Zach Frazier, another interior lineman, goes to the Packers at 41. TJ Tampa to the Texans at 42. Tyler Newbin, safety, to Minnesota, goes to the Falcons. Bo Nix goes to the Raiders at 44. And so it's interesting because if you were really in on Bo Nix and you wanted him at 45, you did not get him. So who did I go with? Mike Sanders still's off the board. So that kind of rules out going completely the same with what I had done previously. So I'm going with Xavier
Leggett
out of South Carolina. And one thing that I learned about Xavier Leggett is, have you heard this man talk?
Very Southern, very country.
You've heard it.
Yes.
You've heard it. I need to find the clip. Hold on.
Yeah, you want to talk about country? Xavier's definitely got some country to him.
Whether you're taking a pitch or catching a short pass or catching a deep ball, what would you say are the best parts of your game that help you get into the end zone so often?
Oh, man, I'd say the deep ball, man. But I really feel like any way that I get the ball in my hand, I could get it to that end zone.
Yeah, you want to talk about a go-to interview? We are all going to Leggett, man.
Whether you're taking a
pick. Oh, man, I say the deep ball, man. But I really feel like any way that I get the ball in my hand, I could get it to that end zone.
It's almost like a character of me doing a Southern accent, and it's really his.
Yeah, no, and so, okay, but this is like vintage South Carolina accent, right? And I lived in South Carolina for 4 years, and okay. So I get it. And it reminds me so much. Like, I don't even know where he's from, but I had a friend, we called him, his name was John, we called him John Boy. And he had that exact accent. And his parents owned like a furniture store in like Poplarville, South Carolina, something like that. And I remember vividly because every time he would laugh, everyone else would laugh because of his laugh. Because that he would awesome. Always like, if you'd say something and he'd go like, and he would laugh and then everyone start laughing. Like, and like, I would bet money that if you got Xavier to get going, that's exactly how he would laugh. Like, God, oh, just the deep ball, man. Just get me the ball. And every time I'm going to get it in the end zone. Just get me the ball. I don't know. It has nothing to do with why I want to pick him, but
no, it definitely fits that big body need.
And I don't want this to come off as me making fun of Xavier. I love that accent. It's hilarious to me. And like, I want them to draft him alone just because those bites will be so enjoyable to listen to. And again, I'm not making fun of his accent. Don't take this as me making fun of his accent. It's just so jarring to hear it. Anyway, so Xavier, 6'3", give or take, 220 some odd pounds, big bodied guy. Well, yeah. And I think if you're taking a wide receiver in the first two rounds of this year's draft, it's got to be because they fit the archetype of the wide receiver that you need and don't have. And currently you have Chris Olave, Rashid Shaheed, very high quality wide receivers, fast, you know, agile. They can run all the routes. They can make guys miss, you know, and they can do a lot of things, but what they aren't going to do is out physical a guy down on the goal line, like box a guy out, be that contested catch guy that you can throw a fade to and they can just out, they can body someone and go get it, right? That's what you don't have. A.T. Perry can do that.
Right.
But, you know, even he's a big guy. He's not a, you know, I want that build, that kind of catch it in traffic that you had with Mike Thomas, right? And I think he's a guy that would make sense. So if I get to this point, again, like a lot of the guys that I would have been interested are off the board. So Xavier's a guy, again, Senior Bowl, got a really good look at him.
Senior Bowl box, right.
Check. And I like, again, and like personality, like we talked about his accent, like you get over his accent and you listen to him talk and you do like a lot of what he's saying is very, very encouraging in terms of his approach and how he feels about the game and that sort of thing. So, you know, while it's fun to kind of like the country bumpkin accent is fun. Willie Gay's kind of got that too. Willie Gay's got a kind of a surprising Southern accent that you might not have expected. Like the way he says "golly," you could tell he's from Mississippi, right?
Man, you saw the Chiefs recently put out too. They're like, you know, best of luck kind of thing to the hype man. Yeah,
Juice Boy, right?
Right.
And so like it's. I only brought up the accent because I want to prepare everybody for if they do draft this guy and you hear him talking, you're like, excuse me? What?
It'd be perfect. Yeah. We'll take him.
Yeah. Fit like a glove. But all right. And we can go through the next few picks. We don't need to go through all of them. But yeah, so like a Chris Braswell, Edgerrin Cooper, Jordan Morgan. So if you wanted to get that tackle, now I took tackle in the first round. I took Taliese Fuanga. If you didn't want to take tackle in the first round, there is a chance that Jordan Morgan falls to you at 45. And I do like right. Jordan Morgan. He's another guy who, check, was at the Senior Bowl. And, you know, he was a guy who he's a late riser. He's a guy that is probably a little more developmental. And I know people, you know, they'll have flashbacks when you hear developmental. But I think he could make sense at 45 if he gets there. And then, you know, Michael Penix, you took him at 45. He got here to 51. Still a second round pick. Troy Frank. Wow, the
Steelers loading up.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I don't think this is Penix to Pittsburgh probably wouldn't make any sense at all, given what we know now. But like, I think this range would make sense.
Yeah.
You know, and then Roman Wilson at 55. He's a guy who I would love to see. If the Saints didn't have two guys who were like clones of Roman Wilson already, I would say that I would love him. But and Javon Bullard,
Georgia safety. These are guys that would make sense. Jonah Ellis, brother of Caden Ellis. So not for nothing. If Jonah is on the board in the third round and the Saints are sitting there like, hey, we got all these fifth round picks. Can we go up and get Jonah Ellis, edge rusher out of Utah? We love me some Utah. That would make sense. Anyway, that's all I got. You got anything else before we close out of here?
No, just keeping an eye now, I guess. Would you even say we're in the second wave now of free agency, or is there kind of like the third wave even?
I think we passed the second wave. I think Chase Young was like the final
tier there,
piece of the second wave.
Gotcha.
And then you're going to get, you know, so, like you're not going to see any more 10 million plus contracts handed out, I would guess. And you're talking about some more prove it deals, some, you know, guys, some veterans who, you know, maybe just want to find a spot where they can go win a title, that sort of thing. Like those, like Michael Thomas, for example. I think that's kind of right, wave three.
And there's really been, I don't think I've heard even a whisper about him.
No, because I think he's, you know, he's not going to be a guy that commands this huge market, but he does want to be a guy that ends up in a good situation. And so I think that's where you shift from total money being sent out to situational signings, like Jarvis Landry coming back home, Tyrann Mathieu coming back home, those types of things. But yeah, so just to tie it up, Steve's mock, he took Byron Murphy at number 14, Michael Penix at number 45. In my mock, I took Taliese Fuanga at Oregon State, offensive tackle at number 14, and then Xavier Leggett out of South Carolina at number 45. And that's it. So next mock, I'd like to do a trade mock and kind of see how things develop.
Man, I got to tell you, with that 14 pick, I was receiving tons of offers.
Yeah, when you're in that range, you're going to be getting them.
Especially with the QBs on the board, right?
Yeah, right, because guys are going to fall, and all suddenly you're going to be like, well, that team really wants that guy. What are they going to be willing to get? Because you can, you know, there's a lot of intriguing options, and you're not going to be the core QB needy team. So you have the luxury of saying, hey, we go back to 18, 19, 20,
right,
and still get the guy that we like, because the Saints always reach anyway.
I can't argue with that at all, right?
I'd like that, but all right. Again, I'm Jeff Nowak. He is Steve Geller. This is Inside Black and Gold. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do that. Follow me on Twitter at Jeff_Nowak. You can follow Steve at Steve Geller WWL. Check out the latest news, notes, and analysis at WWL.com. I will eventually work my way back to South Carolina, to Louisiana.
Eventually, right.
Eventually. I don't go back to South Carolina anymore. There's nothing for me there.
Well, you got to talk to your boy Leggett.
Yeah, maybe we can go hang out.
Yeah. It kind of cranks up.
Yeah. It's every time, exactly the same. I wish I could have a clip. I wish I had a clip of that I could play. And you'd be like, that's spot on. The years of work on this implementation. Oh, all right. Who dat? Go Saints. Thanks, y'all.
Who dat indeed, everyone.